Okay, so welcome to this new series. This is a special series leading up to the Chagim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and so on. We know that Rosh Hashanah, or all the Chagim really, always need preparation. That's the concept. That's why we have the month of Elul in the Jewish calendar as a preparation. We know that the more we prepare for something, the more meaningful it becomes. I think especially this year, we need to prepare well with a good frame of mind and a good dose of positivity, hope and faith and growth and so on. We've been knocked around a bit, the Jewish people, or more than a bit. And it's a good time to refocus and to recalibrate, I guess is the word. There's a Kabbalistic idea, before we get into the topic, there's a Kabbalistic idea that is based on a verse in the Torah, actually, that deals with Israel, the land of Israel, where it says that the land of Israel is a special land that God watches over it from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. And famously, the famous book of Tanya asks the question and says, it's a very strange expression, he watches over it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Why doesn't it just say he just is connected to the land always? I mean, beginning of the year to the end of the year means always. But he says that every year is very different from the previous one because there's a Kabbalistic idea that when Rosh Hashanah comes in, just before the sun sets, we are told that God... Sorry, there's a handout here. Just before Rosh Hashanah comes in, God, so to speak, withdraws his interest from being king over the world. And it's up to us to reignite that desire and reignite that will for him to be our king, which is why the theme of Rosh Hashanah prayers is very much about crowning God as king and so on. But then what happens is that when he reaccepts through the prayers, through the shofar, through the customs and laws of Rosh Hashanah and so on, he generates into the light what we call an Or Chadash, a new light that has never ever been there since the beginning of creation. So it's an interesting perspective to have as we go into Rosh Hashanah to understand that every year, every day is fresh, really. We've talked about this many times, but Rosh Hashanah is a new level of freshness. It's a new light, a new energy, and it's a good time. It's a precious time. It's a time of closeness, but it's a time that needs a little bit of preparation, and that's why it's really good to come together and talk about some of the things that we can learn from what we do on Rosh Hashanah and so on. So what I want to do is, I just want to briefly, because we've talked about this in previous years, but I want to just briefly explain the foundation of what we're going to talk about today, which is the simanim, some of the things that we use, the foods that we use and so on Rosh Hashanah night. And it's based on the concept, let me see if this works. Yeah, it does. No, it doesn't.
Why?
Yeah, you want to, because there was the issue with the clicker. There was an issue with the clicker, so I don't know. Anyways, okay. It's working. No, this is not the clicker, this is the mouse. It's okay, I figured it out. Okay. So, no, because there's a couple of slides that I really want you to see today. Which, I mean, sometimes I could do without it, but there's some important ones for you to see. So, there's a concept that the Talmud tells us that we have this idea of simanim, signs, codes, foods that are symbolic of good things. It's okay, I figured it out. And the Talmud says, simana miltahi, a sign or a symbol, a code, has significance. In other words, when you take something and you tangible, that symbolizes blessing, symbolizes goodness, sweetness, it makes a difference. That's why the Talmud suggests that we have all these foods on the Rosh Hashanah table that symbolize good things. Interestingly enough, by the way, just as a bit of general knowledge, the one thing that the Talmud does not mention is apple, which is like the main one that everyone uses, right? But that's okay, because sometimes things develop in Judaism as custom rather than law, and the apple has become very, very prominent. Okay, but talks about leeks and beetroots and all kinds of different things that in various languages mean beautiful things. Now there is, and I've said this idea before, I'll just share it briefly. There is an idea that was asked by one of the leaders of the Hasidic sect called the Guru Hasidim, way back in Europe, called the Sfat Emet. And he asked the question, he says, it's a really thing, why do we need a siman? Why do we need a code or a sign? Why don't we just talk clearly? Like, if you want something good, so ask for it. Talk about it. Pray to God for a sweet year. Pray to God for sustenance, for wealth, for health. Why do we need codes, right? And he shares a very interesting idea. He says that we come into the new year and it's actually a reminder for us, really. And what is that? He says we come into the new year and we understand or we pray and we hope and we believe and we're confident that God will bless us with a sweet year. He'll bring us happiness. He'll bring us blessing and prosperity, abundance, and so on. But happiness doesn't come from the things that God gives us. He's going to give it to us. We're going to have it, please God. But actually, it comes from an inner happiness, which we've talked about many, many times. And he says that what we need to understand is that God's blessings that he will give us are like codes. We have to decode them. That's why we have this thing called simanim. Meaning we can look at the blessings in two ways. We can use it superficially. It gives us health. It gives us abundance. It gives us prosperity. So we can just use it to have a good time and to have pleasure. Or we can use it for meaning and purpose. In other words, the code, we have to understand that God's blessings are codes. They have to be decoded because we have to understand what is the meaning that they represent. What's the purpose that they were given to us for, right? So if one of the ideas of having the simanim on the table is our commitment to God, so to speak, that when he gives us all of these blessings that we ask for on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, our commitment is that we're going to use them to generate meaning, purpose, in our existence, in our experience, to use them for good things. And that's the reminder of the blessings being coded in these various foods so that we can decode them. All right, just an idea. Now, I know that I wasn't going to talk so much about the apple and honey because we've spoken about that many times. But I can't resist because I learned something recently that I didn't share with you in previous years. So for the first part, I'm going to share with you this idea. Not so much about the honey, because the honey we've talked about many times. But I'm going to share with you something about the apple. Okay. First of all, it works the third time. That's how it works. Okay. First of all, an apple is a very interesting fruit, tapuach. It's mentioned a number of times in Tanakh. It seems to be a very prominent fruit. It seems to be that the Shir Hashirim, King Solomon, in the Song of Songs, talks about that we were born in Egypt. The babies were born under apple orchards. The apple becomes a symbol of the Jewish people, becomes also a symbol of Gan Eden, the fragrance of the apples that Tanakh talks about in the Zohar. Is actually talked about in the context of the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden is called Chakal Tapuchim. You know, there are some people on Friday night, when they make Kiddush, we sing Shalom Aleichem and Eshet Chayil. Then there's a bit of a sort of a few cryptic lines of Kabbalah that we say there. And one of them is about connecting to the Chakal Tapuchim, the field of apples. No one actually knows what that means, but what it actually means, the symbolism of it is that Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve were actually originally created, the place of godly consciousness, is connected to Shabbat, because Shabbat we tap into that energy, and therefore we say Dahi Sudasa, that we're going to have the meal, which is called the meal of the field of apples. Right? Now, another thing that's talked about in Kabbalah is an interesting thing. That tapuach, the word tapuach, comes from the same shoresh, the same root in Hebrew, is lahafiach, to blow. Where do we find the reference to blowing in the Torah? The shofar, but before that, way in the back in the beginning. God creates man. Oh, so when God creates man, he creates the world, the universe, with the concept of speech, whatever that means in a godly sense. And then the soul, the neshama, comes from a deeper place, comes from the place of blowing. So it says, Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim, God blew into the nostrils of Adam and a soul of life. And apparently the apple represents that concept of lahafiach, tapuach, which is blowing. Same word, and therefore we eat the apple, symbolizing the deep down pure soul that we all have, which is ignited and connected to and revealed on Rosh Hashanah, which of course, by the way, the commentaries explain, is also connected to the mitzvah of shofar. Mitzvah of shofar is the only mitzvah that we have in the Torah, that we have lots of mitzvot that are with talking, to say things, to read things. We have many mitzvahs to eat things, more mitzvahs than other things. Right? We have a lot of mitzvahs around eating, Jewish Torah, and then doing, right? So it's praying, eating, doing. We're doing well so far. Thanks. But no, there's no mitzvah blowing, and the only mitzvah blowing is the shofar, right? And why? Because that's the idea. On Rosh Hashanah, the shofar blowing, the blow of the shofar is really an expression. It's coming from a deeper place within ourselves. It's coming from the place of the depth of the soul, which is the soul that God blew into us. So that's a connection between the tapuach, the apple that we have on Rosh Hashanah night, and the idea of the shofar and the idea of blowing. Now, however, let's hope this change, this works now. There's a deeper thing about the apple. Some of you might know this, but it's an amazing thing. But I'm going to explain the significance of it in Rosh Hashanah specifically. The apple is so important that the apple is a fruit that has embedded within it the holy name of God. Did you know that? Okay, I'm going to explain to you. It has embedded within it the holiest name of God. You know, God has many names, right? Spelled in many ways, like Elohim, for example. Kael, Tzvaot. There's many names of God. In fact, there are seven names that we find in Shakai, you know, the name that's on the mezuzah, Shin Dalet Yud. But the holiest name of God is the one that we don't even pronounce.
Adonai.
Right, but that's, yeah, so that's Aleph Nun Dalet Yud. But the way it's written, actually, is the Yud and the He and the Vav and the He. Right? Right? Yud, He, Vav, He. Okay? Now, the Yud, He, Vav, He, this is an amazing thing, is embedded in the apple. How so? If you take an apple, I tried this by the way. You can try it at home. If you take an apple and you cut it not down from the stem, but the other way, right, horizontal, you will find every apple. I mean, one apple that I cut actually was missing one of the pits, but most apples got like this. You'll find five of these pits, right, which is now cut in half, yeah. Which means there's five spaces between each two. You will also find, this is harder to see on the picture. But if you cut it up, you'll see it. That around those five things, there are, you see these little dots, like the brown? Mm. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. You find out, how many are there? Ten.
So
right?
Five and ten.
No, so it's five spaces,
ten
dots.
And then six something else.
Then 1 second, yeah. And every apple has a stem coming out of it, if the fruit store hasn't taken it away, right? A stem which is shaped like a vav. So you have the four letters of Yud. Hey, you have two Hays, the five pits and the five spaces, the ten dots, and the stem, which is Yud and Hay and Vav and Hay, which is the holiest name of God. Every apple. Right? Next time you eat an apple, make the bracha Borei Pri Eitz, because it's a different kind of apple now. All right. Now, why is that significant? I mean, it's very beautiful and it's an amazing thing. But why is that significant? And particularly, why is that significant to Rosh Hashanah? And more importantly, which is really the point of this discussion, what can we learn from it? So, I told you before that every name of God, well, there's seven names of God. What's the idea? The idea is that we know that every name of God, God doesn't really have a name. This is a famous midrash when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the burning bush and God sent him to redeem the Jewish people, and he said to God, what am I going to tell the people when I come back to Egypt? They're going to say, Mashmo, what's his name, this God that you're talking about? What? So tell them I don't really have a name, right? Because why? Because any name is descriptive. A name is a description, and for every name means something, which means it doesn't mean other things, right? So therefore a name is limiting, and God is transcendent and ultimately undefined, and therefore in his essence he has no name. But he chooses to manifest himself in various different names, all right? I'm going to give you a piece of Kabbalah now, right? He chooses to manifest himself in different names. And God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, it depends. If I'm fighting a war, I'm called Elohim or Tzvaot, whatever. If I'm doing kindness, I'm called Kael. In other words, every name manifests a different, every name expresses a different manifestation of God, a different way that God chooses at that moment to manifest himself, right? Now, we know that Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Hadin, the Day of Judgment, right? And that's a concept. I mean, it's a concept in Jewish, it's nothing. I know, so some people find that a very scary concept. It's actually not a scary concept, but it's a fact. God does assess us, he does judge us on Yom HaDin, but what name of God would express the idea of judgment? Anyone know? Elohim, right? Elohim is the name of judgment. That's why in the Torah we find sometimes a reference to judges are called Elohim. Right? Because it's God judging through the judges, so to speak, right? Okay. Now, the name of Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, right, the one we're talking about, the holiest name of God, represents the idea of rachamim, compassion. Okay? Which is a theme we use all the time on Rosh Hashanah. We call God Av HaRachamim or Av HaRachaman, right? The Father of Mercy. We use that expression every day in our prayers, but we use it very often on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We ask for rachamim. I'm going to explain the definition of rachamim in a minute, but we ask for compassion. I think I've told you in previous years, the honey, one of the reasons we use honey is because the word dvash in Hebrew, which is honey, has the numerical value, the gematria of Av HaRachamim, Mercy of Father. Okay. But the name of God that represents Rachamim is the idea of the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey, that special name. And let's understand how that works. Now, we all know, we've done this many, many times, that the first three emotions that we have, the first three sfirot, character traits, so to speak, which God chose with which to create the world, is Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet. Right? Tiferet is often synonymous with the idea of Rachamim. Now let me explain why. The name of God that is synonymous with Chesed is the name Kael. I say Kael with a kuf because it's actually Aleph Lama. You're just not supposed to say it when you're not praying. Right? You'll notice it, right? Elohim is also, that's not the name. It's him, not Kim. Right? Because you just when you say it, you change it because like Elohim, it's really with the hey. But okay. So that's what I mean when I say Kael. Okay? So the name of Chesed is Kael. The name of judgment, severity, hiddenness, darkness, strength, firmness, all those things come with the name Elohim, and that's Gevurah, right? So Chesed is kindness, it's Kael. Gevurah is discipline, strength, sometimes aggression, judgment. All those things come under Gevurah. Now, the third one, Tiferet is often referred to as rachamim, compassion. And there's a huge difference between compassion and kindness. Okay? It's very important to understand. Kindness means, again, this is what Kabbalah explains, kindness means indiscriminate kindness. So if I go into the street and I help people, or I give charity, or I'm kind to people, whatever the case is, right? It's because I want to be kind. So therefore, I don't care if you deserve it, you do deserve it, you don't deserve it. If I'm upset with you, I'm not upset with you, I'm just giving kindness, right? Or sometimes I give kindness to people I don't even know. Now, kindness is a thing that you do, it's a flow of kindness that you give without taking into account the deserving part of if the person deserves it or not, or whether I care if they deserve it or not, right? And then sometimes, for example, we are taught that before the Torah was given, God created the world, and he kept it going. There was a period of time, the first generations, where people were very wicked and evil. And God just gave kindness. He wanted the world to exist, so it existed. Gevurah is something different. Gevurah means that you withhold. I don't give if you don't deserve. I don't give if you upset me. I don't give if you haven't done something for it. That's Gevurah. You hold back. I judge you, right? There is a concept that God judges. Sometimes he withholds his kindness because he's judging someone unfavorably, God forbid, right? And then we have this idea of rachamim. Rachamim is compassion, means that I know who you are, I know you don't deserve it, I know you didn't listen to my instructions, God says, and yet I'm compassionate anyways. And in fact, I want you to take those things that you did that you don't deserve, those negative things that you did, and I want you to turn them around. I want your tshuva, I want you to return to me, and I want you to use the negative experiences that you've gone through and turn them around and use them for the good. And God's rachamim is unlimited because God doesn't do it like people. People sometimes have compassion the first time, the second time, the third time, and after a while they get fed up. Right? God never gets fed up. He does it every single year. He has rachamim. One of the huge themes of Rosh Hashanah is rachamim. Now it's called the Day of Judgment. So there's a fascinating midrash, for example. The midrash says that when we blow the shofar, because there's a verse in Psalms that talks about the shofar, and the verse starts off using the name Elohim and ends up using the name Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, right? And the Midrash tells us because when it comes Rosh Hashanah, God sits on the throne of judgment. It's Yom Hadin, it's a day of judgment. And as soon as we blow the shofar, it's not just blowing the shofar, as soon as we call with the shofar, we yearn with the shofar, right? God, he says, gets up from his throne of judgment and sits al kisei rachamim, he sits on the throne of compassion. That's the power of Rosh Hashanah. The whole idea of Rosh Hashanah is, which is often mentioned in Kabbalah and other places, is mituk ha-gevurot, it's called, the sweetening of the gevurah, to transform the gevurah. How do you transform the gevurah? With tiferes. The gevurah still exists, but you're sweetening it, you're turning it into compassion, and when you do that, not only is the gevurah ignored, but actually it's transformed, and the greatness of gevurah is brought on board. We've talked about this before. The greatness, the strength of gevurah, and the firmness of the gevurah gets turned into blessing. And God's blessings are not just kind blessings, they're strong blessings. In fact, when it rains, for example, I mean, we've witnessed this for the last few weeks in Sydney, right? When it rains strongly, it's called Gevurot Kshamim. It's a blessing, but it's a strong blessing, because it's coming with strength. Kindness sometimes, if someone asks you a favor, do a favor. But when it's gushing blessing, when it's strong blessing, it's because it's coming with an element of Gevurah, of strength, and that's the point of Rosh Hashanah. Not just to have God's blessings, but to have God's blessings in a way where the negative is transformed to the positive. Right? Which now explains the idea of apple and honey. Because I've taught you before that honey is the same idea. Honey comes from a negative thing. Honey comes from a stinging animal and it comes from a non-kosher animal. I mean, it's kosher, which is a lucky discussion for a different time, but right? But it comes, its source, its origin is a non-kosher animal and a stinging animal at that. And yet that creates the greatest sweetness. How does the sweetness happen? How does negativity turn into sweetness? The name of Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, God's compassion. Compassion turns stinging into sweetness, and it transforms it and it brings even greater blessing. Because compassion means that notwithstanding that there's gevurah there, notwithstanding that there's things that you don't deserve, and there's negativity, nevertheless, I'm overpowering that with tremendous strength, and I'm having compassion. And therefore the strength brings even extra blessing. Am I making sense? Are you all with me? Yeah? Right?
Compassion used interchangeably with mercy also.
Yeah, it's mercy. Well, you normally call it rachamim. You could translate as mercy, I guess, also similar thing, yeah? But I guess mercy is like, you know, I'm really upset with you, but I'm going to have mercy on you. Compassion is even deeper than that, I think. It's like a deep understanding of you. Now, the important part about it is this, because this is, you know, so it's not just a Kabbalah discussion. We try to learn some life lessons as well. And we know that one of the things we try and do is we will come back to this later with the pomegranate, but we try to prepare for Rosh Hashanah. One of the things we try to prepare for Rosh Hashanah, right? We try to emulate that. In other words, there's a concept that God responds to us the way we act towards Him sometimes, right? And that's why God gives us this whole month of Elul to prepare for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And one of the things that we try and do during Elul is to build our own compassion. We all have areas that we can be more compassionate. We all have people that annoy us. We all have people that have done things to us. We all have people that, right? It's very nice. I mean, yeah, we're all kind. We try to do kindness, but sometimes we do kindness with people we don't know. It's much easier, you know? It's easier to donate online to something you don't even know what it is. Help someone that, you know, someone needs help, okay. But when the more close you are with people, and the more you expect things from them, and the more they don't deliver, sometimes it annoys us, and sometimes it holds back our chesed. But it's actually an opportunity to introduce tiferet, to introduce compassion. I know what you've done. I know you've hurt me. I know you've insulted me. You've offended me. You've annoyed me, whatever the case is. And yet I'm going to find within myself an inner strength to have compassion. And that inner strength will bring even greater blessing. So one of the things that, of course, and that's the siman, that's the sign. The sign is that message that we dip the apple, which has the name of God in it. But which name of God? The name of God of compassion, which then comes together with the honey, it transforms the sting into sweetness, and it comes, actually, the message is that we try and prepare for Rosh Hashanah that way as well. We try to work on ourselves. That's why it says that Elul is a good time to be kind to others, to give tzedakah, but also to rachamim, to show rachamim, to give, to show and build within ourselves and reveal within ourselves that character of rachamim, of compassion towards others. And the more we do that, the more we actually hope that God showers upon us that compassion. I mean, he'll give us little blessings anyway, but we try a little bit to prepare. So we try by doing that, by being more compassionate towards others, even the people that it's hard to be compassionate, that it's hard to have patience for. And we still do it. Okay. So that's the apple. I learned that the other day and I thought I must share that with you. So although I said I wouldn't talk about the apple, but I think it was worth it. Okay. The next siman, a very, very famous one, is the pomegranates. That I haven't talked about before, so that I'm in the clear now. So it's written that one of the customs of the Rosh Hashanah table is to have pomegranates. It's quite an important one, actually. Kind of after the apple comes the pomegranates. As I said before, it's a very interesting thing that the ones that the Talmud mentions actually have come back. The Sephardim were always very strict about it. Ashkenazim not. We grew up, I know it was the pomegranate, the apple, the pomegranate, the head of a fish. And one more, you know what that is? Tzimmus. You know what tzimmus is? Tzimmus is, yeah, which I couldn't stand as a kid, but I ate it once a year in Rosh Hashanah. Why do we eat tzimmus? Because it's brought down that the simanim don't have to be only in Hebrew. They can be in any language. And because we asked for abundance on Rosh Hashanah, so therefore became the thing to ask to eat carrots, or became the minad, the custom came to eat tzimmus, because in Yiddish, carrots are merin. Merin is also the word mer, which means more and abundance. So that's why the custom came. Anyway, late, but more of recent times, people have found, rediscovered all the ones that the Talmud talks about, the I don't know what these things are, the gourds, the leeks, the whatever. Okay. But pomegranate is quite an important one. Okay. Why do we have pomegranates? So I'm going to share with you three ideas. Yeah. Four ideas. Okay. Two of them are connected, but four ideas. So the first one is something I was thinking about, that I think this year, the pomegranate has even more significance than in previous years. One of the great things about the pomegranate, something to think about at the Rosh Hashanah table, is that it's the only thing we eat on Rosh Hashanah night that is one of the seven fruit with which Israel is praised for. So we have this idea in the Torah that the Torah praises the land of Israel, and it praises it with seven, well, not fruit, but five of them are fruit. It says it's a land of, the Torah tells us it's a land of wheat and barley. It's a land of pomegranates, figs, dates, olives, what I leave out, and grapes. Yeah. Those are the five fruit of Israel, right? So apart from making kiddush, which is grape, comes from grapes, of course, which you do every Friday night, the specific thing that we have on the table on Rosh Hashanah night is the idea of pomegranates. So of course, I mean, that in itself is important as we come into the beginning of the year. Like last Rosh Hashanah, we hope this, we don't have to do it for much longer, that we pray for the safety and we pray for people in Israel, our brothers and sisters, the hostages, the chayalim, etc., right? But I think it's more than that. It's not just about praying and thinking about Israel and Rosh Hashanah, which of course we should. It's about understanding, and I say this because in the last few months, and it's come up, it's gone up and down the last 2 years, but I think in the last few months when it's hit home a little bit because it's been on our doorstep, I sense people are a little unsettled. Some people are fearful. Some people are down. There's that, right? So it's really important. We've talked about this. We talked about how we turn that around and so on. But coming into Rosh Hashanah is a really, really important time to come in fresh and to come in with hope. And maybe that's one of the messages of the Rimon of the pomegranate, coming in with faith and with hope that things will grow. Like I said, it's a fruit, right? Fruits blossom, fruits grow. And I'm saying this because I want to share with you a very interesting moment that I had 5 months ago. No, not 5 months. No, sorry, 5 months. A few months ago in May when I was in Israel, which I spoke to you about that trip, but I don't think I shared this moment with you. When we were in Israel, one of the things, we went down south, of course, and one of the more painful, very painful experiences was visiting Nir Oz, which I don't know what it is now because the East plans to rebuild it, but it was actually left, at that stage, it was left completely untouched. And it was very difficult to walk around Nir Oz. I mean, the destruction, the pain, everything still just, the burnt houses, everything is just crazy. As we were walking through Nir Oz, we noticed something, we all noticed this, that one thing that was a contrast to all the destruction was that, because they, at that time, at least in May, they hadn't touched it since October 7th. So the houses that were burned were still burnt. They were knocked down, They were emptied out and things were all over the place. It was all terrible. But what also wasn't touched was the trees, the flowering, right? And some beautiful, beautiful gardening there, beautiful plants, beautiful trees and so on. And as I was walking, I saw this. A small pomegranate tree. Right, this is like a blown up one, so you can see the pomegranates. These are all little pomegranates like that over there. Right? Not like you buy in a store, they were tiny. And it was like a young pomegranate tree. Right? And I'm sharing with you because this is what went through my mind. I was looking at this, and this is coming on the back of listening to people there and the amazing resilience they have and the hope they have and so on. And I thought to myself, this is exactly what Israel is. This is a place at the moment of complete destruction, complete pain, everything about it, which is very painful. And yet there's already growth. There's already talk of growth. There's already talk of rebuilding, regrowing, hope, sweetness, right? The pomegranate seeds are very sweet. It just struck me at that moment. It was an unbelievable moment. That's why I took a picture, which I found yesterday. I want to put it up there for you, right? Because the idea of growing, of sprouting, is such an important mindset. It's such an important positive mindset. And therefore, maybe going into this Rosh Hashanah, when we have the Rimon, the pomegranate on the table in Rosh Hashanah, maybe this is the message we have to think of. At the very beginning of Rosh Hashanah, the night of Rosh Hashanah, we're going into a new year, and we're confident, we're praying, but we're also confident that God will listen to our prayers. It'll be a great year of hope, that we come in with hope, we come in with faith, we come in with strength, and we come in with a commitment to be fresh and to be sprout, even in the face of pain. But we do it with resilience and strength and determination. And I think one of the messages also is that we look for the Rimon within ourselves. Because I'm sure I've shared this with you before, but there's a famous concept that everything that happens in the world happens on three layers. It's called Ashan, Ayin Shin Nun. Because, you know, when the Torah was given, it says in the Pasuk on Mount Sinai, it says the mount was full of Ashan, smoke. But the commentaries explain that Ashan is an acronym. Olam, which means the world, space. Nefesh, the soul. And Shana, the year. Right? So we have Israel. Israel is Olam. That's the geographical place called Israel. We also have Israel in time, and many commentaries and mystics talk about Israel of time being Rosh Hashanah. That is the Israel in time. But then we also have the Israel of our nefesh, of our soul. We know the soul has many layers, as we've talked about so many times. But the deepest layer, the Yechidah, the Pinta Layir, the fifth layer of the soul, that's the Israel, that's the Eretz Israel of the nefesh, right? So going in with hope, going to Rosh Hashanah with hope, is also about discovering and connecting to our own personal Eretz Israel, our own personal Israel, which is the deepest part of the soul, and allowing that to grow and allowing that to be nurtured and allowing that to express itself by becoming more connected to our Jewishness, more connected to the Torah, to the mitzvot, and so on and so forth. So that's one idea that I thought was important this year with Rimon. A second idea, until we get to the main sort of concept I want to share with you. If you look in some Sidurim or Machzarim, you'll see that some have a custom that when they eat these special foods in Rosh Hashanah, there's a little prayer that they say, right? No? Okay, went too far. Doesn't matter. Come on. Skip one out. Okay. So, what is the prayer? I'll read it to you. So, because pomegranates have a lot of seeds, right? That's the idea. So, the prayer reads like this. Yiratzon, may be the will before you, God. Shenirbez zechuyot kerimon. That our merits, our mitzvot, in other words, should increase like the seeds of a pomegranate. Right? That's one of the things we pray for, Rosh Hashanah. And the commentaries ask a very interesting question. How can you pray to God that you should have lots of good deeds? Good deeds is free choice. That's up to you. Right? We know that. We've talked about this many times. Everything is in the hands of the heaven except for fear of heaven, which means everything is controlled by God except for our moral responses, except for the choices we make to do good or not good, to be kind to someone or not to do kind to someone, to do a mitzvah or not to do a mitzvah. That's our choice. And God gave us that choice because He wants us to choose a connection with Him. He wants us to choose good, not that it should be given to us. So therefore, the obvious problem is, how can we pray to God? It's a nice symbolism, but how can we pray to God? Please, God, we need to have lots of mitzvahs. Well, let's go ahead. It's actually not only a question of Rosh Hashanah. It's a question even in some of our prayers. Because actually, we do this every single day. There's a prayer that we say every day before Shema. We say, Avinu Avarachman, merciful Father, please put it in our hearts to learn, to teach, to listen, to guard, to fulfill the mitzvah. Please, be my guest. And the answer is that actually we don't do it alone. Yes, it is our choice, but we need God's support because it's sometimes difficult. And God gives His blessing. The support that God needs to give, He gives. He gives that support because there's a lot of temptation, there's a lot of inner struggle, and it is difficult. It's difficult to control our temper. It's difficult to be kind sometimes. Each person has their own inner spiritual or emotional or psychological challenge that is difficult. It's a war, it's turmoil, it's really inner conflict. And we know we actually can't, even that we can't do alone. We need God's support, so we pray to Him and He gives it. And then we have to tap into that support. So there's a story I once read about the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim was a great Torah sage before the war. Lived in Radin. Most famously, he taught the laws of not talking Lashon Hara, and it was one of his areas of emphasis, and so on. So one time, someone came to the Chofetz Chaim and he said, "I don't think God answers my prayers." Mm-hmm. He says, "Why?" He says, "Every day I daven with such intent, I ask God, I want to be able to learn Torah. I want to be able to do mitzvot. It's just not working." So Chofetz Chaim said to him, "Tell me, when you finished davening, did you try? Did you sit down, maybe take out a book and start studying? Maybe it'll work." Right? So he told him, "Of course, God gave you the sister. It's just you have to now." He gave you the check. You should go cash it. So that's a symbol of the reminder. We do pray. We pray for good deeds. We tap into that because that's what we want. We want to do good. And God gives it. We have the reminder as a sign that God will bless us with that. We pray to Him and we know He answers our prayers. But then we have to make the commitment, of course, to put it into practice. Okay. Now let's come to the third idea. And this goes to the heart of something that's so important by Rosh Hashanah. How it all works and how we judge ourselves, how we judge others, and how God judges us, and so on. So there's a concept, you know, there's a prayer. So the seeds of the pomegranate are many, right? Many, many, many seeds in a pomegranate. They're not always easy to get out, but there's techniques, but there's a lot of seeds there, right? Yet, each seed is kind of separate. Now, we have this idea, so it's like individuality and togetherness at the same time, which is interesting. What does it all represent? So there's a prayer we say on Rosh Hashanah, some of you might be familiar with it, called Unasana Toikev. Right? Where we there we are. Where we end with Tshuva Tefillah and Tzedakah, right? And in that prayer, it's an ancient prayer, it was authored by a rabbi in Germany in a very tragic set of circumstances. The authorities wanted him to convert, he didn't, and they wounded him, and the whole story, and he died just shortly. He died on Rosh Hashanah, I think. But before he died, he asked to be brought to shul, and he composed this prayer. Anyway, and then he taught it to someone in a dream afterwards. That's the story behind the prayer. It's always considered a very serious prayer. One of the things we say in that prayer is something that comes, it's not from the prayer, it was included in the prayer, is that every Rosh Hashanah we pass before God, Kivnei Maron, right? Kivnei Maron. The translation is that we pass before Him like members of the flock. The Talmud actually gives three translations of the word Maron. Three translations. That's just one of them. That's a standard translation. We pass before God like flock. Another. It's all about passing before God single file, individually. God looks at each of us individually, right? Another translation is Maron is actually a name of a pathway up a mountain in Israel that two people couldn't walk together. It had to be single file because it was too narrow. And that's why it's another reference. We pass before God single file. And then there's another thing about King David's army. I don't remember exactly the reference, but King David's army also, the way they marched, they would march single file. But the bottom line is that this idea is Kivnei Maron. We pass before Him like Maron. Now, that's a daunting concept. The last thing we want in Rosh Hashanah is for God to scrutinize us individually, right? And He does, but part of that is not judgment, part of that is love. God treasures each of us, God treasures every individual. But yet, He does. We pass for Him, that's what we say, we pass before Him like individuals, singly. So, what do we do about that? So there's another interesting Talmud. Talmud says, It's based, I'm not going to go through the Hebrew technicalities of the verse that it's based on, because that it's very technical. But the bottom line, the way the Talmud interprets this is, it has this famous line, that every single person, no matter how low they might be, no matter how empty they might be, no matter how superficially they don't seem to have a lot of good in them, but we know that really, every Jew, the Talmud says, is mele'ah mitzvot kerimon, is filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate, meaning every person has an abundance of mitzvot. So therefore, one of the ideas behind this idea of passing before God like flock is to ask God, you're looking at me individually, that's okay, but we ask you, look at me like a pomegranate. A pomegranate on the outside is just a thick skin, not very edible, not very useful. But behind that not very useful skin, which maybe I am that way, there's hundreds and hundreds of seeds. And we ask God to look at us like the Talmud says, Mele'ah mitzvot kerimon. We are filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. Now the best is this line. How do we know that? So the word is maron, right? Maron. Maron is mem, maron, rem, mem, resh, nun. Same letters as? Rimon. Right? So yes, we are passing by God like kivnei maron, single file, that's the translation of maron, whichever interpretation you use, but it lands up in, we are passing before him individually, but we ask him, yes, kivnei maron, but look at us like a rimon. Right? And that's what we want God to do. But again, we need to prepare for that. Right? There's a preparation period before Rosh Hashanah. Yes, there's a self-reflection, there's a cheshbon, there's gearing up, getting into the zone. But one of the things we need to do is we need to always reflect, particularly during Elul, how do we relate to other people? We know how we want God to look at us. Right? But how do we look at other people? And sometimes the answer might be that we look at other people with judgment. Not to be judgmental is one of the most difficult things. People tell you that. It's one of the most difficult things not to judge others. Because you see the negative. You see the outer superficiality very often, right? And one of the things that we definitely need to work on during the month of Elul is how do we relate to other people? How do we judge other people? How judgmental are we? And to try and work on that. Try and work at seeing people, what's behind the veneer, what's behind the superficiality. Seeing people, even if we know they've done something wrong, or they're annoying, or they have things that just aren't right, but they have so much that is right. There's so much good in everyone, right? You know, there's a little bit of an interesting story. I think I've told you this story before. There was a famous Hasidic rabbi called the Baditshever Rebbe. And he was known to be the advocate for the Jewish people. He just always found good with everyone, right? Like the famous, not the story I want to tell you, but the famous story that symbolizes this was that he once saw wagon drivers in the morning starting off the day, but they were religious Jews, they had to daven, so they were davening as they were greasing the wheels, which is not a really very respectful way of davening, correct? And they were mumbling the words, davening, because they wanted to start their job already, so they were davening as they were greasing the wheels. So he looks up at God and he says, God, what a beautiful people you have. Even when they grease the wheels, they daven. Right? That was the Baditshever. So he once was walking in Baditshev. And in Baditshev, there was a guy there that was known, he was like the town sinner. You know, so he like, didn't do anything right. Not honesty, not between God, not between man, anything. He didn't do anything right. And he meets the Baditshever and he says, oh, Rabbi, good morning, how are you? He says, Rabbi, I got a question. I don't think your Torah is quite right. Because, you know, there's the Shema, and the Shema has, you know, the belief in God and love of God and all that, but then there's the second paragraph of Shema, and the bottom line is, whether we like it or not, there's a bit of a warning there in the second paragraph. Right? God says, like, you know, if you're not going to do what I tell you to do, there are consequences, right? I might withhold rain, which means symbolically you won't have parnasah, you won't have sustenance. He says, listen, I don't do any mitzvah, I don't do anything right, and God hasn't withheld anything from me. So it must be a mistake. So your Torah is not true. So the Baditshever Rav looks at him and he says, how do you know the Shema says that? He says, well, I mean, I have said Shema in my youth. I don't know how said Shema. He says, you know what kind of blessing saying Shema even one time brings? That's why it hasn't been withheld from you. You have a mitzvah Shema. You probably didn't only say it once. You probably said it multiple times. Every person has an abundant good. Of course, we have to grow. And of course, we have to aspire to do more. And so on. That's true. But we all have amazing good. But we want God to look at us like that. Because we are passing by Him. Kivnei Maron. We pass by Him single file. We say to Him, okay, we pass a single file. But look at us as a Rimon. That look at the good we have. Don't focus on the stuff that we make mistakes. Just focus on the good like a Rimon. And God does. He does with love, like a shepherd to a sheep. He has single file, but He looks at them lovingly and He cares for them and He nurtures them. So we need to practice that between each other, be less judgmental, to be less critical, and so on. But I want to just finish with one other idea.
Let's go. Sorry?
Yeah.
I heard that there's 613 seats in a
pocket. Yeah, they're symbolically 613. They're actually not 613. I mean, you can try count them. I never tried, but I don't have the patience to try. Because it says they represent the mitzvah. That's why there's an expression that there's 613 seeds in a rimon. Many rimonim don't have 613. That's a fact. Yeah. No, but someone else has.
In the first picture that you showed, all the food,
yeah,
there was onion.
Onion? I don't know, I just took it off the internet. I said, simanim Rosh Hashanah.
Or was it onion?
I don't think onion is one of them. I'll check it out. I can't go back with this thing because it's broken. I'll look at it again. But we'll talk about some of the others in next week or the week after. But I want to just finish with one idea, a very beautiful idea. A rimon has another symbolism. Because again, we have this idea that we're passing through God individually. God is looking at us as individuals, which individuality is important. We've talked about this before. But at the same time, the Rimonim seeds also symbolize this idea. Each seed is separate, right? Each seed is a seed. But it's packed with the others. So they're singular, but they're together with others. And I'll just finish by sharing with you an idea that's got to do with Rosh Hashanah that I once heard from my grandfather, Rabbi Eloy. And he told me this beautiful idea. He said, when he learned, I'll tell you the whole thing because it was actually very beautiful. I always remember when he told it to me. He said, when he studied in yeshiva in Europe, he studied in the city of Mir. It's a famous Mir yeshiva. It was a very organized yeshiva, and he said they had an interesting custom there. Most Jews don't have this custom, but he told me on Rosh Hashanah you give aliyot, you call up people, right, to the Torah and so on. And normally in a yeshiva you'd call up the rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva, I don't know, the spiritual mentor. So he said there was a custom there that the rabbis of the yeshiva did not want to be called up on Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. Why do you tell me that? Because they used to all be called up on the first day of Sukkot, which was relevant to him because he lost his mother when he was very young. And the yard side of my great-grandmother was the first day of Sukkot. So he said he wouldn't be able to get an aliyah. He couldn't be called up on his yard side because all the rabbis would get them. And he used to get the dressing of the Torah. Okay, that was just in detail. But he was always wondering, why was that? Why? Like, why didn't they want to be called up to the Torah on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur? And then he said he heard an idea and that answered the question for him. The idea is based on a story of Tanakh in the time of the prophet of Elisha. Elisha was the disciple of Elijah the prophet. And Elisha used to come to a town called Shunam, and there was a lady there who would always host Elisha the prophet. And she made him a special room with a table and a bed and things so he could do his thing. And he was very, very grateful. So one day they stayed there, and he had an attendant with him. He would always travel with an attendant. And he said, can you please go and call what Tanakh refers to as the Isha HaShunamit, the woman from Shunam. And we've never properly thanked her. So she comes and he says, what can I do for you? Do you want me to put in a good word to the king for you? Do you want me to talk to someone for you? And so on and so forth. To which she responds, she says, B'toch ami anochi yoshevet. I sit among my people. Which on the surface doesn't make any sense. The conversation... What was that answer? So the Midrash says a fascinating thing. The Midrash says that when he said, can I put in a good word to the king for you, he was actually Rosh Hashanah. He didn't mean the king, the physical king, he meant God. He was a prophet, he had a closer connection, his prayers were strong. He said, you want me to make a special mention for you today? It's Rosh Hashanah. To which she says, no, 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 please don't. B'toch ami anochi yoshevet. I just sit with everyone. I come with everyone. Now, it's true that the tefillah says God looks at us individually, but okay, but I you know, maybe individually, but I pack myself in like the rest of pomegranate seeds. I don't want to be scrutinized. You're going to give me a special mention and God's going to say, who are you saying? Isha Shemamit? Well, let's have a look. Let's open the file, so to speak, right? Let's see if she's worth the special mention. So she says, please don't. I just want to be with everyone else. And my grandfather told me, he said at that moment, he thought that's probably the reason why these rabbis didn't want an aliyah on Rosh Hashanah, because when they would be called up, they'd be called up with special titles. You know, you don't just call up someone's rabbi, you say his name, you call up a big rabbi, Rosh Hashiva. And they were very great people, the leaders of the Miri Yeshiva. You'd have to say, harav, this, hagaon, whatever. Special titles, they don't want no special titles on Rosh Hashanah. Like, let's just be with everyone, right? And there is this amazing emphasis on unity on Rosh Hashanah, and it's an amazing concept. And the amazing concept is, as we come to Rosh Hashanah, we're going into the new year, and we want blessing. Yes, we are Rimon. Yes, we are a separate seed. And God looks at us lovingly, each individual. But we also have to understand the importance of being with everyone else, because that brings blessing. Because when we're with everyone else, when we unite with other people, and that's, again, one of the things we prepare for Rosh Hashanah with, you know, is there any people we have to make up for with? Do we, any people we have to connect to? How can we emphasize the great idea of unity, even with people we disagree with? All that kind of thing, we have to come, betoch ami, we have to come with our nation together. Because yes, God will look at us each individually, but when he sees the seed, you can have a seed of a pomegranate that is lying somewhere on a plate individually, just on its own. But God doesn't want to see that. He wants to look at us individually, but he wants to see us packed together with all the other seeds, because that collective energy and the collective power of Am Yisrael is a conduit for amazing blessing and amazing bracha. And that's one of the other symbolisms of the concept of the pomegranates. So there you have, I've never spoken about the pomegranate before, but there's some interesting ideas behind the pomegranate. Beautiful. Have a wonderful week.